Going on in my head, I'd see a bit of rubbish, but I'd walk straight past it because an excuse would come up in my head. So now I choose to pick up rubbish because I know everyone benefits. And so I organise clean-up events for people. And we've cleaned up so many beaches around the country so far. People come along, but one of the beautiful things that I learned when I was picking up rubbish one day, and I thought, how am I being? We're human beings. And at every moment in time, you're being a certain way. And I thought, how am I being right now? And I thought, I'm being loving, I'm being nurturing, and I'm being caring. But there was a comment before about like forces attract, serendipitous. And I thought, well, no wonder so many people are being loving and caring of me. It's because I'm being loving and caring. I'm naturally attracting it into my life. So it's part of what I'm teaching people when we're doing cleanups, we've got these hours working together, just cleaning up. They're learning how to nurture. The more you learn how to nurture, the more you learn how to nurture and love yourself. And as you learn how to nurture and love yourself, you naturally love and nurture your outside world because you know that's what keeps you alive. My previous outboard motor broke down. I had a 20-horse, two-stroke motor that someone donated. And that broke down when I made it to Walkerville. I took it back to I found a mechanic in Foster, started chatting away, and over the few weeks that I was chatting with him, I presented at the local primary school. One of the days when I actually got the brand new engine off him, he said, Samuel, you presented at the school the other day where my children are at. And that night they came back, they went straight upstairs in the office, all through like the attic in the business. And they're pulling out all this rubbish. And he said, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're going to build a boat. So I was like, oh, great. So when people hear that someone's been through difficult times and they're coming out of it, it inspires people. They're like, wow, I've got this and maybe I could do other things as well with my life. What can I do as a human being? I'm going to take action on my ideas. I'm not going to go to my deathbed with regrets. So it's about inspiring people. It's in how we speak and how we listen. We can't tell someone what to do. That's pushing and that's forcing. But when we speak in a certain way, people get a vision for themselves and they're like, oh, I want that. And they lift themselves up. And it's called empowerment. I saw a little image pop up on my Instagram the other day and it said, don't call me lucky. I've failed more times than you've tried. Interrupt is about interrupting how we're being as human beings, how we're speaking, how we're listening, and how we're behaving. If we all change a little bit, just a little bit, it adds up. If everyone just does a little bit and says, actually, I see a bit of rubbish, we all see rubbish, but what a lot of us do is we choose to be willfully ignorant. It's called willful ignorance. We choose, some excuse pops up, and we walk straight past it. Now that I've said it, next time you see a bit of rubbish, you'll be like, ooh, Samuel's got me there. And it's about stopping and going, you know what? I choose to be more committed to the health of the planet and the health of humanity than my own excuse. I was told to listen many times when I was younger, but I was never taught. Isn't that interesting? We get told to, you listen to me, but we were never taught. But it was only when I actually started doing personal development courses that I was taught to listen. And I was like, wow, I thought I was listening, but I wasn't. It became more about me rather than someone else. And that's one of the key pillars of leadership. When we're thinking about us, that's selfishness. But when we're there for others, that's selflessness. We're there for others. We're just listening to them. We're going, okay, I get what you're saying. I learnt principles. When I learnt that I'd been an arsehole, a jerk, a dickhead, a wanker, a stubborn prick, resistant, I'd been controlling, I'd been manipulative, all of that.
You were an 380 captain, are you?
Oh, sorry.
There's a Chisholm song in this.
Yeah. when I learned that, and when I was getting mentored, following others, I learned about how I was at the source of all of those broken and busted relationships, even the busted relationship that I had with myself. I was at the source of it. But then it gave me powerful principles. One of them is like the finger of judgment. When you point the finger at someone else and you say, well, you're such and such, there's three fingers pointing straight back at you. And when you do the work, and I was pointing the finger at others saying, well, you're a wanker. But then I did the work and I said, well, actually, where in my past have I been a wanker? And I picked up the phone and I took responsibility like a leader does. And I said, hey, look, you know what? I apologize for not listening to you. I apologize for arguing with you. That's on me. I apologize for being a jerk. Relationships came back together like that in a matter of minutes. And they'd been dead for years. But that took courage. It took courage to get out of my comfort zone. But that's how we grow. It's the only way to grow. If you stay in your comfort zone, you're not growing. You've got to use courage to go across that little barrier, and it's scary. You start shaking, you're like, oh shit. But then as you do and you clean it up, you grow and you evolve and you take on new knowledge. And that's what you can pass on to others, and you say, this stuff works. I'd prioritized my concern for others' judgment of me over my own personal safety. I was arriving at a place called Pirates Bay at Eagle Hawk Neck on southeast Tasmania. The storm had started coming in. I had a support yacht at that stage. And I said, look, I'm struggling to get in. The winds are picking up. And he said, do you want a tow? And in my mind, this quick image came up of these guys that I'd met at the boat ramp 6 months beforehand, and they'd abused the crap out of me. You can F off out of here. You're trying to take all our jobs. You're this, you're that. And there'd been plenty of people saying, you're nuts, you're crazy. And I didn't want to receive any more of that kind of that language, because words are incredibly powerful. And so I said, look, no, I'm going to go full throttle. I'm not quite there. I'll give it another go for an hour. And over that next hour, the winds got stronger and stronger and stronger. And then I soon found myself going backwards. I was overpowered. Well, I was underpowered and the wind was too strong. So I called up my support yacht captain and I said, look, I'm going backwards. Do you reckon you'd be able to come out and pick me up and tow me in? And he said, oh, I've put down my anchor and it's starting to look pretty rough out there. I said, okay, I'm aware of the coastline a bit further up. I'll just cruise around and I know the bays and I'll just keep going. What I wasn't aware of was the winds and the storm that was about to hit. And pretty soon I found myself in 50 knots. And 5 to 7 metre seas. And at the start, it was pushing me towards New Zealand, and I'm okay with that. I am. I'm okay with that. I've helmed the yacht through Bass Strait when a storm came through, and it's actually got its own Wikipedia page. It's called the mother of all dust storms. So I've helmed the yacht through that with about 80, 90 knots, 20 metre seas. I surf big waves. I don't mind big waves out in the ocean. But this vessel's pretty small, and at the start I was getting pushed out to New Zealand, and that's okay. But then the wind direction changed and started pushing me towards Maria Island. And there's kilometres of cliff line and no safe place for me. It's winter, it's night time in Tasmania. I'm watching my tracker. Time starts slowing down when death becomes imminent. I'm like, this isn't good. There was going to be no rescue in that situation. It was too strong. I prayed. I don't often pray, but I did this time. I got on my knees and I said, I need help. And the thought came to me, I was exhausted already after a day of sailing. And I thought, if I don't get up and give it a go, I'll never know. Got on my wet weather gear, on again. You know, it's white water going sideways on the ocean. And I put my head out of the cabin and the first thought that came into my head was, I've been out in worse than this. So I got up and started getting things moving. It's a long story, but I spent the next 8 hours wrestling with that vessel and I just missed the easternmost point of Maria Island and saved myself from getting smashed onto big cliffs and big waves. But after that I thought, am I being irresponsible? But then I realised that I was more concerned about what others might say to me than my own personal safety. I thought, no, my personal safety is first. I rearranged that. I thought, my personal safety is first. They can say to me what they want to say. That's the lesson. And I kept going. I love being out in the ocean. I love being out in nature. I'm an animal. We're all animals.
Do you catch fish while you're at it?
I don't catch fish. So this is a spiritual journey. I think the title of my book is going to be White Fella Walkabout. It's about me finding me and finding who I am and what I'm capable of doing. So I choose not to fish because I realise that for me, and I assert it's the same for every one of you, is that you want to be able to say to yourself wholeheartedly that you love life. Love is one of the most powerful forces on the planet. And to say that and fully embody saying that, I realise that if I'm pulling something out of the ocean and killing it, I'm not loving life. I'm killing life. So I chose not to kill. So that's my reason at the moment for not killing fish. So I love them. They're little beautiful things and you're welcome to eat them. That's fine. But this is it's for me to fully embody saying I love life. I focus on what I can give up. We're whole and complete. There's nothing wrong with anyone. You are whole and complete. You're perfectly imperfect. To advance and to grow and to change, it's about identifying what to give up. And what it is, it's my righteousness. I'm right that something is wrong, that something's happening to me. I'm right that someone shouldn't have said that to me. Or I'm right that that shouldn't have happened to me. So it's righteousness. It creates disconnection. So when I see what it is, it's about giving up so that then I can create a new possibility. So I give up my bitterness, I give up my resentment, I give up being right that it should have gone a certain way. I give that all up, I take responsibility, but then I choose a possibility of being calm, patient, forgiving, abundant. Does that give you a bit of an idea?
Where do you see waste? Because I'd imagine that would be front and centre of a lot of the discussions.
One of the angles that I look at waste from is the angle that not a lot of people look at it from. Some of the businesses that I work with previously, they had their raw materials as waste. There's a seafood farm up on the East Coast, Pia Winberg, I think it is. She gets the cow manure from some of the local dairy farms nearby, and they give her money to take their waste away, which would normally cost them a lot more, say $1,000 per kilo, whatever it is. They give her $100 per kilo to take their waste away. So she's generating income while she's getting her raw ingredients for her business. That's usually a cost for a lot of businesses to get your raw materials to work with. So waste, a lot of people think that it's not valuable. That's why they walk past it. But if you can shift your mindset and see that it is valuable and learn what to do with it to create value out of it, it's an incredible entrepreneurial opportunity because it's free. Governments will even give you money to take it away and do something with it. What we're pointing to is that a lot of people think that the whole waste industry is hard. It's difficult. We don't know what to do with it. But I'll share with you that we only think something's hard because we don't know how to do it. We're still guessing. We're playing with it. But when we know how to do it, it's easy. And it's about looking at that language and going, well, actually, I removed the word hard. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm just going to work out how to do it. It's not hard. It's just got to work it out. I've managed to build a boat out of rubbish. I've never built a boat before in my life. But I got rid of the word hard. That was just something that I was creating, and I would learn how to do it. And once I'd done it, once you've done it once, it's easier.